Welcome to Inside the Studio, presented by iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Joe Levy. Okay, it is December. We have almost made it through 2020, and certainly this year has been, and I'm trying to figure out how I could put this without cursing for the next 40 or 50 minutes. But let's just say 2020 has been a difficult year. But it does bring us something special as it winds down, and that is a new album from the Australian duo The Avalanches. It is called We Will Always Love You. It's here, and it's spectacular. Now, this is only the third album The Avalanches have released since their debut, Since I Left You, 20 years ago. And each one of these albums is pretty much amazing. My friend Sasha Fair Jones likes to say they're one of the only groups to bat 1,000 in the 21st century, which I guess is actually a little easier if you average one album every 6 or 7 years. But still, part of what makes it so impressive is that each one of these albums has been a different kind of adventure. That debut, Since I Left You, came out in the year 2000, and it was lovingly constructed bit by bit out of about 3,500 samples of what Robbie Chater calls junk store records, which means samples that you don't recognize right away. So Since I Left You is a big favorite of Team Inside the Studio. Shout out to team leader Noel Brown, who took time out from talking about conspiracy theories on his podcast, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, to make sure that he could be on production duty when we recorded this episode's interview with Robbie and Tony DiBlasi. And, you know, one reason I love Since I Left You is that some moments it sounds like what happens when you have two tabs open on your browser and they're both playing sound at the same time. But on the other hand, it had this out-of-left-field hit, Frontier Psychiatrist, that had turntable scratching on it, so it sounded like it was put together by a live DJ. But most of the album was just a seamless and sunshiny flow of really relaxed and easy grooves. What wasn't seamless, relaxed, or easy was making a second album. That took 16 years. The Avalanches did not release Wildflower until 2016. There were a lot of stops and starts along the way. They spent time assisting on the score for a musical version of King Kong that did eventually make it in some way, shape, manner, or form to Broadway. And they also worked on music for an animated film that's been described as a hip-hop version of Yellow Submarine, and that never saw the light of day. So Wildflower is sort of a concept album, if your idea of a concept is a mixtape that you'd play in the car on a road trip from your apartment in the city to some sort of psychedelic countryside. And if the Avalanches never did get to make a hip-hop version of Yellow Submarine, at least they got to make a hip-hop version of the Beach Boys' Smile, with guest appearances from rappers like Danny Brown and Biz Markie, indie rock luminaries like Father John Misty, David Berman, Tame Impala's Kevin Parker, as well as a sample of a chorus of kids from a high school in Melbourne, Australia, singing the Beatles' Come Together. Now, it's just 4 years after Wildflower, and we get a new album, We Will Always Love You, record time for the Avalanches, although this album almost didn't happen at all. Robbie talked with me about his issues with addiction, and he recently told the New York Times that after Wildflower came out, he'd been drinking again, and he checked himself into detox. That was January of 2017, and they had to cancel some tour dates, and he was thinking at that point the group might be over. But when he got out of rehab, he found that Tony had managed to do some touring without him, and things were still going. There was still a band. He could go out on the road. He could play Coachella. So while every single Avalanches album has mixed joy and melancholy, the way both of those feelings are supercharged on We Will Always Love You might have something to do with discovering that the everything you thought was gone, was over, was done, is still out there and better than ever. We Will Always Love You is a little less about samples, a little more about creating music the way most groups do, drums, bass, keyboards. Johnny Marr from The Smiths dropping by to play guitar, Rivers Cuomo from Weezer doing some vocals, you know, the usual thing. The Avalanches are still obsessed with old records, but in a different way this time out. They talked with me about how their idea of something they call Forever Voices involves how dropping a needle on a record is like summoning the spirit of someone or something that's departed. And we also talked about how a book called The Recording Angel by Evan Eisenberg helped shape the album. And we also talked about how every sound or singer ever broadcast on the radio is out there somewhere, echoing in outer space. And speaking of outer space, we talked about the album's connection to NASA's Voyager space probes in 1977. It was pretty cosmic. Here's what else they had to say. Tony and Robbie, thank you so much. Welcome to Inside the Studio. Inside our respective homes,
thank you
I think. Everybody's at home. I'm in New York, of course, and you're both where?
We're both in Melbourne. I was just about to say stuck in Melbourne, but I don't know if I should say that, but yeah.
We are stuck in Melbourne. I don't think if we tried to leave, we wouldn't be allowed to.
Oh, my.
So officially stuck, but you know, that's okay. It's all getting better
and it's Tuesday evening here in New York, and I guess it's Wednesday morning for
Wednesday
you.
Wednesday morning, yep.
This is Wednesday so fantastic because we're about to talk about like interstellar sound vibrations, and now we're crossing the dateline. I feel like I'm living in the future. This is all happening.
It's kind of perfect.
It is.
We will always love you, and believe me, I appreciate it. This album is a little different for you guys, and not just in that it took less than 15 or 16 years to make it, but you went about things a little differently this time. Like, you can hear, you listen to this, you hear the love of the Dusty Groove is still there, but things weren't necessarily constructed the same way. How'd the process change with this record for you guys?
I think it began with like a very clear idea of what we wanted to make this time around, whereas like the Journey of Wildflower, which you mentioned, that took 16 years, we're almost finding what that record was about as we went along, and we took all the twists and turns, and I'm the first to admit we got a little lost along the way, and the end result was beautiful, but you know, it took a long time.
just a little lost.
with this record, it was a singular vision to make a record almost like exploring our own mortality and in a way our own personal journeys, and so a very clear idea from the beginning, and that idea also had some very clear sonic images with it. So we wanted a shimmering record, maybe a more hi-fi record, and a kind of a more modern sounding record. So we still began working with samples, but then we added other instrumentation, and it was also a way for us to A, do something different, and B, not take another, you know, 10 or 15 years. Yeah, like we really felt...
Yeah, and I think it was just searching for that concept of what Wildflower was about took so long that, you know, especially Robbie and his infinite wisdom was like, okay, we're going to record a new record. We got to work out what it's about before we even start, so we're not just searching around, you know, for 16 years trying to find that. So we found it quite early, and you know, the results are 4 years later, which is for us extremely short. For Post Malone, that's like a decade or something, but you know.
Well, so part of the difference, obviously, the samples are there, but on this one, if you wanted a bass line or a keyboard part, you could play it. You could bring someone in to play it. Is that about right?
Exactly. Well, it was our close friend and collaborator, Andy. So myself, Tony, and Andrew were kind of like, we're digging for samples, but then Andy's a fantastic keyboard player, so he would do little chord sequences and sketches over some of the samples. I always just work with samples, so I'm always just adding samples and samples and samples, but we weren't afraid to reach out to friends and bring other people in, and a guy, John Cal Kirby, fantastic keyboard player and out of Los Angeles. And it was just a way for us, I think it sounds selfish, but the process of making Wildflower is kind of like, and since I left you, they're lonely, long processes. Like you're at home digging, and it goes on for years. So we kind of thought, like, it was just as much about the life experience for us as well, like, let's hang out with real people in the studio, you know, and get their energy and learn how they make records and learn things and enjoy the making of it and, you know, have a wonderful life experience as well as making a record quickly.
hanging out with real people. We're talking about all the collaborators on this record. You got to record in Melbourne, but also in Los Angeles, and you got to work face to face, which is it feels almost like a science fiction world right now, right? Because when's the last time we were all in a studio face to face working, right? But those collaborators, let's talk about some of that and how much different it was to go in and make a song as opposed to build a track layer by layer.
Well, I think, I mean, personally for me, I only know how to work one way. And that's like since I was like 15 or something. Like I play a lot of instruments really badly, right? So I'm kind of an amateur musician. And sampling was like how, for me personally, I figured out this is...
Don't sell yourself short.
No, the sampling was how I figured out this is how I can express myself. This is my thing and I'm going to get really good at this. And so I always just learned how to build in layers and how to like add layers of paint and like putting this jigsaw together. And so when we're working with singers now, like I feel like I still work in a similar kind of way. But
it's just using, I guess, the singers as samples as well. Like, even the way that, you know, we'll get a vocal back and it's never just like, oh, lay that over the track as the track got sent to them. It's, you know, especially Robbie will just take it away and chop it up and all of a sudden the chorus is in a different spot and, you know, some words are messed around with. So it's still like this process of using the vocalists as samples, not just having them kind of singing over a sample.
Yeah, and everyone was so cool about it, and I think came to the process knowing how we work. So I would even be in the studio, I would say, give me a minute. I would run and chop up the take they'd just done, play it back to them, and then they would like hang out, maybe listen to it for an hour or two, respond to that edit, and do another vocal take. And it was this beautiful back and forth thing.
So you said that the theme and direction of this record was more clear from the start. And let's talk about what that theme was. I know part of the focus is something you call forever voices. What does that mean?
I guess it's something we just started thinking about as we were diving into this record and thinking about guys who've always sampled music. I love thinking about how, you know, we might grab an old recording from the 40s and there's someone's voice captured on that, and they've obviously long since passed away, but their voice remains like a beautiful ghost or a beautiful spirit. And I often think about, well, what was going on in their life at the time? You know, it's like a beautiful little time capsule or message from the past of someone's whole life and their pain and their experience captured in a song, and then maybe that 7-inch record.
I was just going to say, it's like they're living forever too. It's they're always with us and they never die because their voice is still there at in this
That's
beautiful
right,
moment.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, and then, like obviously when we sample on vinyl, like maybe someone else has owned that recording for like 20 or 30 years and played it a bunch of times and spilt wine on it or, you know, added crackles to it and maybe going through a breakup, you know. And
You're talking about the user... imprinting their own touch on the vinyl they've owned. They've put their stylus on it and maybe they've put some tears on it, spilled some wine on it.
That's right.
Played it 100 times, it's got dusty and that's how the dusty sound comes from, and it's like they're imparting
their life and
their life onto it as well, and their experiences with that music they're imparting onto the actual vinyl that we end up sampling.
Yeah, so it's a lovely thought, and then it's very humbling as well, because then we're just another part of that process. You know, we find the record and sample it, put it into a song, and it gets broadcast out onto the radio, and then someone else is driving along in their car that day and they hear it and it's part of their life, and it's just a big cycle of life, you know. So it's a lovely thought.
So the ghost voice is every recording out there. Or the forever voice, that is. Every recording out there is in a way, the first recording is a form of sampling, and the listening is a form of adding to that. But there's also this interstellar concept, right? The idea that sound waves go out into the ethos, literally into space, And you're very specifically referencing the sending out of sound recordings on the Voyager probe back in 1977, because the cover of the record is this image of Annie Drian, who worked on putting that record together, what's called the golden record on the Voyager space probe.
Which is such a great title.
Yeah, so yeah. Rich. But tell me a little about that. How did you come to that story, and what does that mean to you?
Well, I think we're on this whole sort of Forever Voices tangent, and then I was reading a lot about, you know, radio broadcast from planet Earth, and how every song ever played on the radio is still floating out there in space, and you can kind of calculate actually from the date it was broadcast how far that those vibrations would have travelled, from how many light years, you know, they would have travelled from now. And so, that, you know, you can picture planet Earth like a radio station just floating around out there, and Elvis is floating up there, and John Lennon, and, you know, and it's like all these beautiful spirits out there singing to the cosmos. And it's a beautiful thing. And and then as we were sort of going deeper into this record, we came across the story of the Voyager Golden Record, and I think NASA had approached Annie and Carl Sagan to compile it in the end of the 70s, and they went on this kind of epic quest to because I think they felt such responsibility, you know, it's like, how do we sum up the sounds and life of planet Earth on one golden disc that's going to be out there floating around in the cosmos forever in case it's actually ever found by intelligent life. So they began this process of compiling this record, and as they were compiling it, they fell in love, and had the idea to record her and brainwaves and heart waves and have them imprinted on the record as well, so maybe intelligent civilizations would learn about our biology if they ever found this record. And the day she was booked in to have the scans for that, Carl proposed to her. So she says that the sound of a young woman's heart in love is forever captured and put on that record, and will be floating out there in the cosmos for like a billion years. So
this is really an amazing story, and I got kind of deep into it. I think it's a day or two before they record her brainwaves that he proposes. Yeah. But the added level to that is that they knew each other, but they weren't going out. They'd never kissed.
No.
They're on the phone, right?
Yes.
They're not sitting in the same room. And he's like, you know, maybe we should get married. An amazing story. And then she comes back to him after that and says, is there a way to capture my brainwaves on an audio recording? And they capture her brainwaves while she's geeking out on love.
On love. Now, isn't that the most beautiful thing you've ever heard? I mean,
see, this is romance before the days of Tinder, the way it used to happen.
Well, there's that, yeah. And the Voyager story, for anyone who doesn't know it, the idea is that they put this album in gold on the side of this space probe. There are two albums because there are two space probes, Voyager 1 and 2. I think they're about 14 billion miles away by now. But they put all this music and all these greetings from different people around the globe in different languages. But Chuck Berry's on there, Mozart's on there, Louis Armstrong's on there.
Yeah, I think there's like whale sounds and all kinds of different things, yeah.
And not only is it called the Gold Record, but did you know this, the engineer for this record? Jimmy Iovine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Better
known for running Interscope Records and sending out Eminem and 50 Cent into the world than sending this thing to space, but he engineers the recordings.
That's incredible.
Dr. Dre. Well, it is a human mixtape. So that kind of ties in with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So this story comes up on the record. I mean, her image is on the cover of the album, and it's this amazing image. It's a picture of her. She's either coming into focus or sort of dissolving into digital dust, as it were. I'm not quite sure which it is. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. It is really beautiful. And that's our friend Jonathan Sawada, who was exploring. I guess we were speaking to him about the whole thought process about transmissions and recordings, not just travelling through time, but also potentially through space and through other dimensions. I mean, I got interested as well in, like, mediums who claim to contact people who had passed and record their voices and stuff like that, and they're these strange staticky transmissions and... You know, I mean, YouTube is full of them, and the guy was swearing. He's like, that's Karen Carpenter's voice. I've been communicating with her, and you can hear her very clearly, you know, say this or that. But anyway, I was talking to Jonathan about this stuff, and so he got this old black and white photograph of Anne and ran it through a spectrograph, which turns it into sound. And then I think it, you know, the various colour frequencies are laid out as on this... the sound frequencies are aligned to different colours on the spectrum, and then it's turned back into an image again, and that's the result you get. It's extremely beautiful.
Wow. So the picture's been transferred into sound waves and then transferred back into image. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And again, that Carl Sagan and Anne's love story comes up on the track Interstellar Love with Leon Bridges. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, it's part of it, you know, because we were... I was just talking to Leon about what this record's all about, and we were hanging out in the studio. And obviously, the song has its own meaning to him, but it was part of the backstory as we were developing the idea, yeah.
This notion of forever voices and the ghost images, the ghost voices that you were just talking about on YouTube. That's fascinating because the album begins with a track called Ghost Story, which is a phone message, right? From someone who wants us to know they'll always love us. It's so hard when we're not together. And I kept thinking when I was listening to it, you guys must have recorded this record with a different world in mind than the one we live in. But when that's the first thing you hear when you sit down to play this record, it really feels almost like a social distancing concept album from the start, like, because we are not together now, right?
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, it's lovely that you say that, and it's strange the way it worked out. I think it was, I found a very beautiful book in a junk store called The Recording Angel, and there's a chapter called Solitary Ceremonies, and the writer talks about that solitary thing of sitting down and, like, playing a record, and it's almost like a seance room, we're summoning ghosts. And it's this process we all know very intimately from, you know, being teenagers in our bedroom, and, you know, music is, I love the way it can be very, very extremely personal but extremely social at the same time. You can experience it at a festival with 20,000 people, but it can also be this thing where you're listening to a record on your own when you got a broken heart or you're lonely, and it can comfort you, you know. So that we were exploring some of those inner journeys and some of those inner moments, and I guess it's just aligned perfectly with that, the loneliness that we're all kind of feeling at the moment, you know. And it's, if it's a record about connection, you're right, maybe it's resonating right now.
But in some sense, I want to ask you, had you made this with the idea of, oh, yeah, it'll be summer, we'll be able to go out and play some festivals, see some people?
Yeah. Yeah, it was supposed to come out in May or June or something.
Yeah.
Oh, May. Okay.
And we were going to be playing in Europe. And
So, but we've had a massive, you know, pretty much all year we've been locked down. So a lot of this record, I mean, we'd made it before the lockdown, but a lot of the process of releasing everything was done during a really, really hard lockdown. So it was like an avenue to kind of also reach out to the world by putting out all these singles beforehand that we weren't meant to be releasing so many, but because everything got pushed back because of the vinyl plants weren't printing and stuff like that, it was like we were able to just communicate in that way by, you know, putting out songs every couple of months. So that was a not really nice feeling to do while we were ourselves, like, locked in our apartments.
So you mentioned this has a slightly more modern feel to it, a modern sound to it. When we say more modern, how modern are we talking?
It's all I really mean is like more bass or something like that, you know? Like,
Robbie always says that it's like, but modern, it just means we got to be actually played some bass on it, so it's got some bottom end. Because you listen to Since I Left You, and it's all just sitting from
high range,
mid to kind
yeah.
of top range, and yeah. So I guess it's just using more of the musical spectrum that I think that we would call modern.
Well, I mean, certainly. I hear some 90s on this record. You work with Tricky on two songs, and particularly Until Daylight Comes, that song has a classic Tricky trip-hop feel to it. But also, you know, there's the song with Blood Orange, the title track, We Will Always Love You, has that trip-hop feel as well. How important were those records in the mid-90s to you?
Extremely important. Tricky's first record was something I listened to over and over and was kind of like, you know, just my young brain was like, how is this record made? How is this put together? I was just fascinated, you know. So that, records like that are very informative, and my first experience of sample-based music, you know, along with some other records. So it's incredible to come full circle now and work with someone like him, yeah.
But that first Tricky record, we're talking about Max and Quay.
Yeah.
In 1995, did you hear that and understand it as a sample-based or understand the importance of samples on that record? Because it was only reading about it afterwards that I heard any of that in that music. It wasn't immediately apparent, I thought.
Right. No, I it was to me. I was like, I think my ears just pricked up at like when something's just a bit, it's like, something's going on here, you know. There's like, if there's a collage element, I don't know, I was just immediately drawn to it. It's funny, like, I remember, like, Big Audio Dynamite had a couple of big radio pop singles in Australia, like, when I was young. And it was the same thing. I just remember going, like, this isn't normal music. What's going on here? I was just fascinated how it was put together.
Not normal music, because Big Audio Dynamite, Mick Jones's band, he'd come out of the guitar bass drums band, and certainly that was open to technology and used it, but Big Audio Dynamite was a very early example of what you could do with machines instead of just instruments. And so you mentioned that, but Mick Jones turns up on this record on a track called We Go On, which features Cola Boy and also... Is that, in fact, Karen Carpenter, a sample of Karen Carpenter singing Hurting Each Other?
It is. Yes.
It is. So that's another one of the, what we call the kind of spirit ghost samples that, you know, it's like she's, you know, been passed for a long time, but she's still in this new song that we've, you know, got just about to come out. So, yeah, we love all that stuff. And it was so good having... Mick Jones and Cola Boy, who's just a legend on there. But Mick was a real surprise for that song, because we'd kind of sent out just the word that, you know, we'd love to get him on a track, and didn't really hear anything back. And then all of a sudden we get an email saying, oh, by the way, here's Mick Jones's, you know, vocal over this track. Like, how the hell did this happen? You know, you just have to pinch yourself sometimes and go, oh my god, that's him. And then you listen to his voice over the track, and it's so unique that, you know, you just keep listening. And you know, we just feel blessed when things like that happen. I'm working with such, like,
and,
he's such
and,
a legend.
And tell me, what drew you to that Karen Carpenter sample?
I think it was, that was a sample that we had from years ago, from the Wildflower years. And back then we used to put them on CD and share the CDs with each other and like listen to the samples, like little mixtapes. But I think it's just a very sad, beautiful line. And it's got a lot of weight, you know, considering her story and her life. And, you know, like, I love lines like that, like in the title track from the Roaches sample, like, We'll Always Love You, or... You know, we go on hurting each other, and it just says so much, but it's still like, it's very much up to the listener to imprint their own life story over it, and it'll mean different things to different people. You know, to me, it means just how cruel people can how, you know, as a species, we're very, can be very kind on an individual level, but as a collective, you know, we're still horribly mean to the planet and to each other, and, you know, we've got a lot of growing up to do. That's what it means to me.
But there's always with, you know, samples like that, there's always, I don't know, for me, there's always just a bit of touch of hope with the way they're sang. Like, they're not completely just, oh, everything's horrible. It's like, everything's horrible, but why? Why can't we fix it? Like, so there's it just the way they're sung, they still have just that tiny little bit of positivity to them and that little bit of joy with them that, that we kind of really resonate, you know, like that little space between melancholy and kind of happiness and that beautiful kind of, when you can get that right, there's just something that hits you right in the heart that's a beautiful feeling.
Yeah, no, it is such a great example, that Carpenter's song, of a California sunshine pop that has a darkness underneath it, and not very far underneath it either. It is right there in the lyric of the song, and it also interested me so much when I heard it, because I recognized it without placing. I must have played it two or three times. I know that song. I grew up on that song, I finally understood. It was always on the radio, or my older sister was playing it, but here it is. I've never heard it quite this way before. And the added level that it is the Wrecking Crew, the Phil Spector, Brian Wilson studio band playing on the, the as well. So it's quite a lot going on there.
Yeah. We get to work with some great artists, even if they're not aware that they're working with us.
But you certainly do on this record. There are so many facets. I mean, we mentioned Mick Jones, but Johnny Marr and MGMT are on a track, The Divine Chord. You worked with Tricky. You worked with Rivers Cuomo, Cornelius, the amazing Japanese artist. How did these come together? You said you put the word out, and Mick Jones came back kind of magically. But tell me about how some of these other things came together. It must have been a little more direct than that.
Most of them were, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some people, like Cornelius is a friend, so that was just a lovely coincidence. And I think we met him back, he put out a record called Phantasma around the same time as Since I Left You came out, or a couple of years before, actually. So we met him in Japan way back when, and obviously we've always just really loved his work, and he just happened to be in Los Angeles, and it was my birthday, and he came by the studio. And then this song just sort of appeared. So that was kind of one of those beautiful coincidences, you know. That was just
He's
lovely.
Such a quiet guy, and it was amazing. Like, this is one of the being in a studio and watching someone perform and being really blown away, because there were maybe 10 people watching him, and he just got out the guitar, and so the track would just go, and he'd just do like a little da-gunk, da-gunk. And then he'd be like, play that back. And then he'd add a little bit more to that. And then about six takes later, like, everyone's going, we get it. Like, at the start, we're kind of looking at each other going, what's he doing? And then by the end of the track, he's built this whole thing that he had going on in his head. And it just, I mean, it just came out amazing. And, you know, that's the real joy of being in a studio with someone and watching an amazing talent just do their thing, and how inspiring that is.
He created like a whole guitar symphony, but one exactly. note at a time, just slowly painting what note over note.
One note at a time. And are those notes stacked on top of each other, or are they moving linearly?
And so they're kind of like cascading over each other and ringing over each other. So he must have had the whole picture in his head before he began. But I think some of the Los Angeles studio engineers were hanging out, like, we'd been very excited because Kago was saying, you know, maybe he'd record, and we organized the guitar, and they were just watching him like, I thought you said this guy was fucking amazing, like, what's he doing? And then and then by the end it was like oh my goodness. He's such a sweetheart. So that they're the kind of moments that you know, like, I'll always remember.
Yeah, and that's the joy of doing what we do. And stuff that we never take for granted of witnessing things like that and going, that's a special moment in your life. And, yeah, we love that.
So Rivers Cuomo from Weezer turns up on Running Red Lights, and there's this old story that Rivers used to tell about keeping all his melodies. He had a master notebook of all his melodies, and he knew they were all gold, and he had them cataloged, and he could refer to them. But apparently, from what you've said, he now does the same sort of thing with his lyrics?
Yeah, it's a PDF, and it got sent to us. And it just had the most catchy, beautiful kind of... the reason we wanted to work with Rivers is because of that beautiful midpoint Tony mentioned earlier, of halfway between happy and sad, that melancholy place. And that's, I feel like he gets that, and that comes to me, that lineage is directly like from Brian Wilson, you know, people like that to Rivers. That beautiful place where, you know, it's like life is so beautiful, but it hurts so much at the same time. And so, and all these little phrases in this spreadsheet kind of were like that, that you would just read them and your heart would break. It's like, I've been running red lights to get to you, might be one of them, you know, and there was a bunch there. And I think it was like, you guys can choose one.
So there were three that got sent back, and I don't think there were the melodies first. They were just lyrics.
Lyrics, yeah.
So it was like three sets of just kind of chorus lyrics, and we were like, can we hear the melodies before we choose? So he ended up singing just quite roughly the, you know, roughly for him is still pretty amazing, each three of the little verses. And in the end, we were like, can we have them all? Because they're all amazing. So we ended up kind of working each three into the song. And, yeah, it just turned out so good. And that was kind of the first vocal collab that we had. So we were like, okay, let's keep going with this. This is working. This is good.
And the three that you worked into the song, were those the three rough takes that he had sent, or did he refine them further for you?
He refined them further, and then we also went back and asked him to just record a little bit of stuff into his phone for like an interlude stuff, a bit like the album opener, and he did that as well. Rivers was fantastic. That bit didn't actually make the record, but yeah, absolutely fantastic.
And we got to meet him too, because that was, a lot of them were done when we were together, but that one was done via email, but they came and played in Melbourne maybe a couple of months after that. So we got to meet him, and, you know, we were like, oh, this is Rivers. We got to, you know, Googled, you know, all these amazing cool places in Melbourne for hours. Like, where are we going to take him? We got to impress him. And in the end, we just kind of, it was a rainy day, and he's just like, do you just want to walk around in the rain? So we got some umbrellas from his hotel and just walked around and then sat in a Starbucks for an hour and talked, and then we went, and it was like still an amazing experience. But all these cool dinner options and bar options and everything like that, it was like, no, I didn't want to do any of that.
We can take you for the world's greatest sushi, or we can go to Starbucks in the rain.
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah, walk around Melbourne with umbrellas in the rain. So that was just perfect. That was so poetic.
So Rivers, that track, Running Red Lights, it brings me to something I want to ask you about. David Berman. He was a collaborator. He reads a poem on Saturday Night Inside Out, the last track on Wildflowers. And sadly, he took his own life last year. And it's a loss that hit a lot of people so hard, because he just put out his first album in a decade, Purple Mountains album. And it was a fantastic album. And a lyric from one of the songs on that album comes up on your album on a track called Dial D for Devotion. And then it flows into that Rivers song, Running Red Lights. And part of that lyric goes, the light of my life is going out tonight without a flicker of regret. And I want to ask you, what kind of person, how well did you know David? What kind of person was he, and what made you turn to that lyric?
It's kind of hard to answer. I guess, I mean, to be perfectly transparent, part of the reason why Wildflower took so long is because of some of my issues with addiction, personally. And I first got really unwell with drinking as a very young person, like 14, 15, 16. And by the time I was 20, it was nearly game over for me. I'd nearly died. And then I eventually, when I first got well, I threw myself into making music, and that was since I left you. And I had a long, long time of being very healthy and very well, and then unfortunately fell back into a period of addiction as we were making Wildflower. And I'd been corresponding with David about working together, and that's, in a strange way, that's how our relationship began, was corresponding. And he was kind of, he helped me through, and he would write me beautiful emails and sometimes just practical advice about how to look after myself when I was struggling. And so we formed a...
Because he had his own struggles with substance abuse as well. Yeah, I
mean, you know, he just spoke to me from personal experience, and I would guess that's not my place to talk about what his journey, but he certainly was very, very wonderful and caring to me. And we were... Those lyrics you mentioned on Saturday Night Inside Out, that was something we worked on remotely during the making of Wildflower, and I remembered that period very well because I was very unwell, and his lyrics would come through sometimes, and this poem, and I would edit parts of it and send it back, and it kind of just kept me going. So that's how our relationship began, and it was correspondence, and he often talked about coming to Australia, and you know, he never did after that, but that's how I knew David, and I just knew him as just a very, very beautiful man who was very, very generous, and whose work just touched me more deeply than, you know, than I'm really touched like that, you know. And his book Actual Air is very, very beautiful as well. And so his sister was an aspiring artist who I was very fortunate enough to get to know in a small way. And then we were speaking about doing more music for this current album, and he sent some of the lyrics for the Purple Mountains record in advance, and then a couple of them ended up fitting for different pieces on our record and for the Pink Sifu verse in Running Red Lights. And David was happy for us to use them, which was lovely. It was lovely, that through line from the previous album to this album. Sadly he passed before the music came out.
But it was just so amazing that we were actually able to get still just a piece of David on this record before he did pass.
I do also want to say we're back to this idea of the happy and the sad together, because one thing he was so good at was... There's an element of humor that runs through so much of what he does, and that line that's in the song, "The Light of My Life Is Going Out Tonight," which could mean a couple of different things, and in fact, in the song, it does mean a couple of different things. The light of his life that's going out tonight is someone he's in love with, right? That's one of the meanings in the song, and so it comes to this line: "The light of my life is going out tonight in a pink champagne Corvette." You know, he loved the funny and clever wordplay of country classic country songs that meant so much to him. And it really is in that Purple Mountains record.
Yes.
And that was another devastating thing about his loss, was that he'd made this wonderful record that said so much about how to keep going and how to use humor and your mind to transform the darkness.
Yes. Exactly. You just said it better than I ever could. Yeah. And that line, I mean, God, that's just such a gorgeous line, isn't it? Like, without a flicker of regret, and the way it ends. And I mean, he just... What a unique talent.
So there's an idea that comes up, I think, a couple of times on the record. The idea of music is a kind of divine force. There's music makes me high. Which has a real classic disco feel to it. And there's also a song called Music is the Light, which has a bit more of a ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space kind of feel.
Yes.
And I guess we could also include the track that features Perry Farrell, Oh the Sun, where he's singing about the divine designer. So what are you saying here? Is music the answer to life's problems, or is it just another one of the forever voices connecting us sometimes? What's the deal?
It's a very personal thing, but for me, it's transformative. Music's transformative, you know, and it can change the way I see the world completely. A certain song on a certain morning, and I'm just looking at life completely differently, you know, the way it can hit you and the way it can feels at a vibrational level. So, and I love breaking it down to a very simple elements of like, well, music is just vibration. We're all made up of just atoms vibrating around. Of course it affects us profoundly, you know, and it's like...
And some music just has a different... Like, beautiful music has a different vibration to, say, heavy metal, which is great in its way, but it's going to hit you in a different thing. So, I don't know, like, all these vibrations are kind of... coming and hitting you, and you're accepting him in whatever mood you're in. If you're a little bit sad, a sad song is just gonna make you feel, you know, amazing. And so it's like how you resonate with how our vibration resonates with the vibration of music is just a beautiful thing.
Well, I want to thank you for making some music that transforms things for the rest of us. And I know this wasn't the goal, but I also want to thank you for making a perfect album, for sitting on your couch with a cat on your lap, staring out the window and wondering if the world has gone to hell yet.
I love that. Thank you.
Because that was the way I experienced part of this. And it turns out it hasn't gone to hell yet. And the music is awfully good.
And I feel like it's picking up. I feel like there is there's a mood lifting in the world.
Well,
with,
I hope so.
The idea of a vaccine, and a lot of people seem to be happy that Donald Trump's gone. So I feel like they're you know, in the collective consciousness of humanity, we've taken a little bit of a step up. Hopefully it continues, but it's 2020, so who knows?
How's your cat going, Joe? Has he been good, or she been good companion?
It's both. It's a he and a she. Thank you so much for asking, because now we've come to something I really like to talk about. It's a brother and a sister.
Nice.
Yeah. And they're doing well. They've been very good companions. And like your record, they will always love me.
I've had the same. I live by myself and just have my cat, and she has kept me through this year. So it's animals are a joy.
Well, I've got to tell you, with the cats, they will love us until we don't feed them, and then they will eat us. But for now,
so true.
For now, they do love us. And guys, again. Sincerely, thank you so much for this record. It is a great thing to hear right now and a great thing to have right now. And it really is wonderful.
Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joe. Yeah, great chat.
Yeah, and thanks for being here. Thanks for being on Inside the Studio.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Inside the Studio is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.